Chapter 6. October 7th. This is the 10th day since we left Charleston, and I should think our progress has been very rapid. Robert Curtis, the mate, with whom I continue to have many a friendly chat, informed me that we could not be far off Cape Hatteras in the Bermudas. The ship's bearings, he said, were lat. 32 degree. 20 min. N and long. 64 degree. 50 min. W, so that he had every reason to believe that we should sight St. George's Island before night. The Bermudas, I exclaimed. But how is it we are off the Bermudas? I should have thought that a vessel sailing from Charleston to Liverpool would have kept northwards, and have followed the track of the Gulf Stream. Yes, indeed, sir, replied Curtis, that is the usual course. But you see that this time the captain hasn't chosen to take it. But why not? I persisted. That's not for me to say, sir. He ordered us eastwards, and eastwards we go. Haven't you called his attention to it? I inquired. Curtis acknowledged that he had already pointed out what an unusual route they were taking, but that the captain had said that he was quite aware what he was about. The mate made no further remark, but the knit of his brow, as he passed his hand mechanically across his forehead, made me fancy that he was inclined to speak out more strongly. All very well, Curtis, I said, but I don't know what to think about trying new routes. Here we are at the 7th of October, and if we are to reach Europe before the bad weather sets in, I should suppose there is not a day to be lost. Right, sir, quite right, there is not a day to be lost. Struck by his manner, I ventured to add, do you mind, Mr. Curtis, giving me your honest opinion of Captain Huntley? He hesitated a moment, and then replied shortly, he is my captain, sir. This evasive answer of course put an end to any further interrogation on my part, but it only set me thinking the more. Curtis was not mistaken. At about 3 o'clock the lookout man sung out that there was land to windward, and described what seemed as if it might be a line of smoke in the northeast horizon. At 6, I went on deck with M. Letourneur and his son, and we could then distinctly make out the low group of the Bermudas, encircled by their formidable chain of breakers. There, said André Letourneur to me, as we stood gazing at the distant land, there lies the enchanted archipelago, sung by your poet Moore. The exile Waller too, as long ago as 1643, wrote an enthusiastic panegyric on the islands, and I have been told that at one time English ladies would wear no other bonnets than such as were made of the leaves of the Bermuda palm. Yes, I replied, the Bermudas were all the rage in the 17th century, although laterly they have fallen into comparative oblivion. But let me tell you, M. André, interposed Curtis, who had as usual joined our party, that although poets may rave and be as enthusiastic as they like about these islands, sailors will tell a different tale. The hidden reefs that lie in a semicircle about 2 or 3 leagues from shore make the attempt to land a very dangerous piece of business. And another thing, I know. Let the natives boast as they will about their splendid climate, they are visited by the most frightful hurricanes. They get the fag end of the storms that rage over the Antilles, and the fag end of a storm is like the tail of a whale, it's just the strongest bit of it. I don't think you'll find a sailor listening much to your poets, your Morse, and your Wallers. No, doubt you are right, Mr. Curtis, said André, smiling, but poets are like proverbs. You can always find one to contradict another. Although Waller and Moore have chosen to sing the praises of the Bermudas, it has been supposed that Shakespeare was depicting them in the terrible scenes that are found in The Tempest. Apostrophe, the whole vicinity of these islands is beyond a question extremely perilous to mariners. Situated between the Antilles and Nova Scotia, the Bermudas have ever since their discovery belonged to the English, who have mainly used them for a military station. But this little archipelago, comprising some 150 different isles and islets, is destined to increase, and that, perhaps, on a larger scale than has yet been anticipated. Beneath the waves there are madrepores, an infinity of number, silently but ceaselessly pursuing their labors, and with time, that fundamental element in nature's workings, who shall tell whether these may not gradually build up island after island, which shall unite and form another continent? I may mention that there was not another of our fellow passengers who took the trouble to come on deck and give a glance at this strange cluster of islands. Miss Herbey, it is true, was making an attempt to join us, but as he had barely reached the poop, when Mrs. Keir's languid voice was heard recalling her for some trifling service to her side. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.